Hi, my name is Scott Bellis. I played Max Fennig on The X-Files, and you're listening to The X-Cast.
Welcome back, everyone, to the X-Cast. The truth is in here. I'm Tony Black, your host, as ever. And this week, we are covering the 11th episode of Season 2, Excelsis Day. And I am joined once again, back after a few episodes break, with my good podcasting mate, Mr. Andrew Brooker. How are you, sir?
I am good, thank you, mate. How about yourself?
Not too shabby. Not too shabby at all. I haven't been haunted lately by anything.
No?
No ghosts. How about you in advance of this episode?
I've got a creaky house. That's about it. Makes weird noises when I'm trying to sleep, but I don't think they're ghosts. I think it's just shit building.
If only that was the case with this episode, it might make it more entertaining.
True.
But yeah, I think it's that's our cue to talk about, this week's episode, Excelsis Day. Excelsis Day is the 11th episode of the second season of The X-Files. It first aired on December the 16th, 1994, was written by Paul Brown, and was directed by Steven Sergic. It sees Mulder and Scully heading to the Excelsis Day elderly care home when a nurse is attacked and seemingly raped by a paranormal ghostly entity.
This is Michelle Charters. She's a registered nurse at a convalescent home in Worcester, Massachusetts.
What happened to her?
According to Miss Charter, she was raped. The abrasions and contusions here would be consistent with her claims, as would be the medical report, which cites the kind of injury and tearing associated with sexual trauma.
Where'd you get this? Violent crimes?
No, the woman made the video herself. It seems that no one will believe her story.
Why not?
Because she claims to have been raped by an invisible entity, a spirit being.
I have several X-Files that document similar cases.
I know, I've been here since 6 this morning going through them.
Well, then you know none of them have ever been substantiated.
Not surprisingly.
Well, given the emotional and psychological violence of rape, the face or identity of the attacker is often blurred or erased from memory. That he could be perceived as invisible is a logical leap from there.
Yes, but this case is different.
Why?
The victim has filed a lawsuit against the federal government. She seems to be certain who the spirit being is.
Mr. Arden. Hal Arden.
And you know him?
He's been a patient where I work for about 5 years.
Miss Charters, the facts of your case seem to contravene those of other cases we have on file.
Right. You mean the other woman raped by invisible man cases?
How do you know it was him who attacked you?
He made advances toward me. And he said things, rude things. Look, when you bathe somebody every day for 5 years, you get to know more about them than you really need to. And an old man smells a certain way, and he feels a certain way.
I know this is hard for you.
No, this is the easy part. See, hard is not being able to get disability leave or workman's comp and having to go back to work with this guy.
To continue our investigation, we're going to need some kind of evidence, physical or...
Yeah, I know, I've heard it. Unless you have hair or semen or fibers or whatever, you guys can't build a case.
That's right.
Look, I didn't make this up, okay? I was attacked. And I'm not some kind of shrinking violet who would repress the memory of a rapist's face. If I could positively ID him or give you something to incriminate the man, I would.
Okay, Brooker, out of 10, where are you going to place Excelsis Day?
Four?
That noise. That noise
pretty
sums
much
it up.
Everything you need to know, doesn't it?
We could end the podcast there, I think, in theory, and have a 2-minute podcast. 4, yeah?
Yeah.
Why are you scoring that one quite low?
It's just so boring, and it's so crap. And you know what, right? As you said, it aired on December 16th. I thought, well, that must mean that must have been the one before the mid-season hiatus for like over Christmas. You know, a couple of weeks off while Christmas happens. And I've just checked, and it was.
Yeah, yeah, it would be.
Imagine this shit being your last episode before Christmas. I don't think I'd go back.
You would surely worry about that, wouldn't you?
I think you'd have to. I think if you were a creator on this show and that was your one leading up to Christmas and it was just this bland, dry fart of a mess, it's just no. Yeah. I genuinely would be worried about people coming back.
Me too. I'm gonna give this the same. I was thinking about a 4. I think it's really odd, actually. Like, it's not very good, yeah, for a start. There's nothing memorable in this. I think if ever you were going to, you know, point to an X-File where you can remember hardly anything, it would be this one. There's only one moment in this that stands in my mind and has stood in my mind, and it's the moment where Scully is surrounded by the pervy old ghost men.
Yep.
Right. That's the only bit in this whole episode that I remembered.
But it deals with some really some quite hardcore issues, and
yeah,
it just seems so icky about the way it deals with them.
But it deals with them really distastefully,
yeah,
quite often, doesn't it? It's like, I mean, the big point of contention here is obviously that you start with a ghost rape, right? If that's not bad enough. The worst thing about this episode, and we'll talk about this more in detail, but the worst thing about this episode is that Mulder doesn't believe in ghost rape. It almost is funny.
There's a couple of bits, and actually, you know, because he makes a couple of smarmy comments about it as well, with like a half a smile on his face. I'm like, you fucking arsehole, that's not okay. And
no.
Oh, no, it felt just, I came at the end of it just icky and horrible. I don't like it.
I don't really know what they were thinking on this. It was, there's some interesting points to make. Steven Sergic, who directed this, he only ever directed this episode. No surprise.
Well, you wouldn't want him back either, would you? Let's be fair about this.
You wouldn't. This was the first episode. He was Canadian. This was the first episode to be directed by a Canadian. Obviously, The X-Files is filmed in Vancouver. And he offered his services because he was a fan of the show, basically. So he said, you know, yeah, I'll do it. I'll come in and do it. They only got the script from Paul Brown 2 days before filming started. So Chris Carter, and it was unfinished. So Chris Carter had to make changes all the way through. They were prepping and shooting. And we talked about this a little bit in Ascension, because Paul Brown wrote Ascension, which was really strange. Me and Darren found it really strange that a guy who hardly features in the story of The X-Files at all, he only produced the first 9 episodes of The X-Files in season 2, and that was it. And he wrote Ascension, and he wrote this, and he was gone. So people who know The X-Files and know the production history a bit better than me might be able to fill us in a bit with this as to what happened with Paul Brown.
It does sound like, especially with this episode being what it is, it does sound like his way of doing things wasn't as good as a lot of people may have suspected when they first brought him on.
Yeah, you know, and there's probably a big argument to say that most of Ascension, even though it's not an amazing episode, it's a very, very important episode of The X-Files. It's a very iconic episode of The X-Files.
Yes.
That probably a lot of that was Chris Carter rewriting the script, more than likely.
Yeah.
So there's a question of how much is Paul Brown, and you know, how much is Paul Brown in this? Maybe the whole thing of Mulder being a bit of a twat for a fair bit of this, and actually really oddly not believing in something that Mulder would absolutely believe in.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Of course he would. He'd believe more in this than Scully would as the woman, I think.
There's this kind of point in the episode where you go, I wonder if someone's trying to make a point about how people perceive rape. There's kind of this thing, and I don't want to say the wrong thing because it will make me sound like a complete twat, but there's kind of this feel about it as if to say, you know, blokes don't believe that people were raped.
Yeah.
And so this is how we're going to show that, and this is how we're going to deal with it. But it just seems, it feels really ham-fisted in its point, if that's its point. And sadly, I get to the end of the episode, and I don't think the episode's smart enough to have that point. I just think it's gross.
It is, and it's got a bit of a skeevy moral compass with this rape stuff. And the whole, you know, it feels like it's trying to make a point about sexism, you know, the more than anything else. You've got all through the episode, you've got, especially around the character of Michelle, the nurse, you've got all this sexist behaviour, certainly at the very beginning and with the old pervy old guys and things like that. It's not doing it for the sake of it. There is some element of commentary, but it's so ham-fisted and the episode has no real idea of what it's really about because the script is rubbish.
Yeah.
That you get to the end and you think, well, A, Mulder is completely out of character here because even though he talks about how entity rape, as he calls it, is unsubstantiated, I don't give a shit if he's never found any proof. Of course he'd believe it. He's never had a fucking UFO land in his garden. It doesn't mean he doesn't believe in them.
Exactly. And this is the problem. They've taken this social commentary that they're trying to have, and they've made the wrong person not believe it. And as much as it might feel wrong at the time to have Scully go, yeah, and, you know, I don't believe it. It doesn't happen. For her to then get to the end of the episode and believe it would be a much better way of dealing with this fucking story than having the guy that believes everything suddenly not believe it and have the one thing so far that he's not believed be the woman has been raped. It's fucking horrible.
It is horrible. It is horrible. And I'd like to think that David Duchovny at some point went, are we sure about this? Because, I mean, David Duchovny is interesting because there are times you can tell he's really invested in this script or he's really invested in this character because he really brings his A-game. Like Dwayne Barry, a few episodes ago, he's amazing in that. But then there are some episodes where you can tell that he doesn't give a shit. And he's there because he has to be. This is very much one of those episodes where you can tell that he's like, this is bollocks. I'm just going to very monotone say the lines, you know.
The wisecracking and the smarminess, it just... And it made me, more than anything else, it just made me angry at the episode.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, you suddenly realise one of your favourite TV shows has actually behaved like that. You know, I wouldn't accept that out of any of my mates, let alone a TV show that I love so much.
IMDb give this a, out of 2,187 votes, they give it a 7.2, which is way too high.
Yeah.
Although, as has been said before, the IMDb ratings, much like Rotten Tomatoes and all these aggregates, they're not really accurate. You know, they only ever really rest between like a 6.5 and a 9.
Yeah,
you know, they never dip any below than that. So 7.2, even though it's way too high, it is still one of the lowest aggregated episodes of the season. I think the only one that gets... Fresh Bones is on a par, and Fresh Bones is better than this. It's not the best one, but it's better than this.
Oh, it is. Much better.
And the only other one that really stoops this low is... and lower, in fact. Oh, it's just two that stoop lower. There's 3, which gets 6.6. Now, as we talked about 3, 3 isn't... 3's odd, but it's not a bad episode, and that doesn't deserve that low. And then you've got Fearful Symmetry, which is at 6.5. Now, to be fair, Fearful Symmetry is shit.
Yeah, yes, it is.
But it's not as objectionable as this. You know, I mean, I think Fearful Symmetry is a worse episode, but I think in terms of one of the most sort of shitty episodes of the X-Files, this is up there. This might be this might be it, actually.
So Fearful Symmetry is the invisible elephant one, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, Fearful Symmetry is a shit episode. This is a really shitty episode.
Yeah, you know? Exactly, yeah.
You know, it's only a slight difference, but that difference, you know, Fearful Symmetry is a bit shit, but at least I'm not going to skip past it, you know, when I get to however far through the season it is when I get to that episode. I'll sit and watch it and go, oh, okay, that's a bit crap. Whereas this one, now I've seen it with that kind of light of having to look at this and be able to talk about it. I'm like, I'll probably never fucking watch it again. It made me feel ill.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's never one you'd watch again. You know, I don't think I've watched this since... If I've ever done an X-Files watch, I've always kind of skipped a few episodes. Certain episodes I've skipped. I think I've probably seen this 3 times in my life, you know, and I've watched the X-Files a lot over the years. So it wasn't one I was familiar with, and I have no intention of... I will only watch this again if I'm doing a die-hard, full-on watch with, you know, and even then I'll be doing something else while I'm watching it because it's rubbish. Apart from the fact, like you said, it's boring. That's the other thing. It is fucking boring all the way through. And so this is going to be fun. let's talk.
We haven't had an angry episode in quite a while.
No, we haven't. Let's do it. Let's talk more about Excelsis Die because we have to. Thank you. So we don't have to. We're here because we want to be. But still, we're completists.
Doesn't that make it worse that we've sat and volunteered to talk about this shit?
we're completists. Yeah. So it's very much the whole idea that in an ideal world, you'd skip the bad ones. But we're completists. We're doing this so you don't have to watch it, okay?
I said, we're doing this for listeners. We have to do it.
We're doing it for you. We start off and we're introduced to Excelsis Day, the home. And it's a big, old, imposing, several-story building that almost looks like a classic haunted house, really. But inside, you've got orderlies who are douchebags, basically. Just, like, watching boxing, goofing around, don't give a shit about their job.
They actually, the people that came to mind was, I've forgotten his guy's name, the guy that plays Tombs.
Yeah, Doug Hutchinson.
Reminded me of him in Green Mile.
Yeah. Yeah.
That
yeah.
kind of just nasty douche canoe.
Yeah, douche canoe. I'm having that one. I'm using that.
It's yours, mate. You can have it.
I'm having it. Cheers. And then when Michelle comes in, the nurse, they're just really sexist in the sense of they're just going, oh, well, we left those jobs for you. You know, you're a woman, so you do it.
Yeah, you can go do the cleaning. It's okay.
Yeah. We're going to stay here and watch the boxing, darling. Off you trot. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
And Michelle is played by Terrell Rothery, who is who's someone I remember from Stargate SG-1.
Oh yeah,
she only appears once in the X-Files, but she's the Doctor in Stargate SG-1. She's in a lot of that, really.
I think she was in Arrow as well recently.
Oh, probably. Yeah, probably. Is that shot in Vancouver?
I couldn't tell you.
I bet it is.
It's a CW show. I'm almost certain it is.
I will put money on Terrell Rothery having shown up in Smallville as well. She absolutely will have done. Yeah, because I'm watching Smallville right now, and I can't remember being in it, but I'm sure she... No, in fact, she was! She was! She was in Smallville. I remember now. There you go. So yeah, she goes off and sees the two old dudes, Stan and Hal, and Hal's like a proper old perv. How about a sponge bath?
It is pretty gross.
But it is intentionally gross. You know, that the whole thing with that is that they're making a point about, you know, sexual politics and everything, but she pretends to be, you know, jokey about it, but she's not really. As she says to the Chinese orderly, Gung, let's just soak up that name for a minute.
Yeah.
Gung. Why don't they just call him, you know, Mr. Wong Fat or something like that, just to be even more like...
Literally just go a whole racist and go Mr. Oriental.
Yeah. But yeah, as she says to him, you know, she makes the point, you know, you don't have to have your ass smacked by him and things like that all the time. So she doesn't obviously like, as you wouldn't like, the sexism of having your ass grabbed and being, you know, sexually harassed and things like that. But he's already, you see Gung, and he's a very sort of calm soul wandering around. But then, so you've established all the key people in the home, really, most of them anyway. And this is where you get the weird shit going, when Michelle goes to change a bed because someone's died. And you get the, as we've talked about, the ghost rape. Obviously, you don't see all of it, but you see enough that the door is barricaded, things are flying around. She gets pushed onto the bed, strapped down, screaming, and that's where we end it.
But did you notice the straps that magically open up? When the bed moves, the straps already magically open.
I didn't spot that. Good observation. Interestingly, the original draft of the script, Michelle was written as a lesbian, but they dropped that element because Chris Carter said it just felt gratuitous at that point.
Oh, that's gratuitous.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Okay. Terrell Rothery said that she said it was about the rape scene. She said it was challenging for me because I couldn't play off anybody. There was nobody there, so I had to create my own stuff. It was me throwing myself and flipping myself on the bed and trying different things. That process was fun. It was fun to really conjure up as an actress, to have to play off my own stuff and my own imagination. They had a crew down below the bed, and they actually had a vibrator on the bed.
Okay.
I don't think that she means the vibrator. That you might
Seems
think.
Like a weird detail.
Because if she did, that's fucked up. Yes. That really is fucked up. But yeah, she goes on and talks about how, you know, it wasn't... Obviously, the scene couldn't be too graphic, and they had to do several things to illustrate what happened. They didn't have the she said they didn't have the clothes ripping. They had the Velcro wristbands. I moved my arms back, and the band snapped closed. She said originally that she was going to levitate, And she said, I was going to be fitted with this body cast thing to help me levitate me, but time wouldn't permit it, so we weren't able to do that.
They'd done that in The Entity, didn't they? I mean, to fully rip off The Entity would have been a bit much, I think.
Well, exactly. They're already sort of going down that road. It's just a bit unsavoury, really. But the idea, the concept of this is fine if you do it tastefully. You know, there's nothing wrong with doing an episode that has something horrific happen to violate a woman like this. And it might, even though, having said that, how do you do a ghost rape tastefully?
Well, you don't.
How do you do that? You don't.
What you do is you do like we did, like they did with The Entity. Have you ever seen The Entity?
A long time ago, I have. But
it's fucking horrible. It's a horrible, horrible film. But that's the entire point of it, is that it's a horror film. And take away the fact that it's a ghost raping someone. It's literally, the film is a horror about rape. So tasteful is not the word to use, but and definitely not something like delicate, but it's not gratuitously bad like this is.
Yeah.
You know, I can watch, I won't watch it for fun, because it's not a fun film to watch, but no. I could watch The Entity and not come out feeling half as icky as I did watching this.
Yeah, I think that's a good summation of it. So you've had that scene, and you're into the main episode, and we've got a little Mulder watching porn at work joke, which is something they do every now and then. When Mulder walks into the office, Scully's got the telly on, and he goes, whatever tape you found in that VCR isn't mine. And she replies with, good, because I put it back in the drawer with all the other tapes that aren't yours.
Isn't she just the mum figure at that point? No, mum, it's not my tape, really.
No, it's not mine. But equally, you know, transposed with the idea that, should you be watching porn at work, Mulder? And we've mentioned this before on the show. It's an odd thing that he seems to think, you know, I know it's done in jest, but there is, you know, he clearly has some stuff in work.
Well, that's it's said more than once, isn't it? So you get to that point where it's protesting a bit too much. You're definitely fiddling at work.
It's fiddling. It's like, dude, you're already in the X-Files, right? People want to shut you down. I mean, wouldn't that have been brilliant if the whole reason that he got shut down had been because he watches porn, and HR basically went, no. Don't worry about a global conspiracy. He's contravening the rules of porn.
What we actually get, you see, is we get a prequel to his mate being fired in Californication.
Yeah.
The security footage of him jerking off in his little office.
Whacking off. Yeah, again, another deleted scene I don't think we'll get. I think what was good about this opening bit is that it's actually flipped, because normally it's Scully walking into the office and Mulder's the one sitting at the desk and he's got all the information and he does the briefing. This time it's Scully. So Scully's the one who talks about what happened to Michelle and all this kind of thing, and that there's a lawsuit angle against the federal government that makes this a little bit more pressing to investigate. Although I didn't quite understand when she says Michelle is suing the federal government. Because she's not. She's suing Hal, the pervy old guy.
Yeah.
So what's that about? I didn't quite get that. That didn't make much sense.
No, it seems like a weird pretense to just have them turn up and investigate. But it also makes it sound like the government is sending the FBI to debunk a rape claim.
Yeah. Because Mulder straight away goes, oh, well, could she have imagined it? And, you know, I think what they're trying to get at is this instinctual sort of male bias of, oh, well, you know, it's probably not rape, which is shit anyway to think that. And Scully, so I don't think Scully really should have been a lot more like, Mulder, stop being a prick.
Yeah.
Throughout this. And she's not, you know, she's standing up for the idea. And she's the one who ultimately, as we'll talk about later, she's the one who convinces him to stay a bit longer and look into it a bit more. But she doesn't call him on this. She doesn't say to him, well, hang on a minute, you'll believe in fucking werewolf monsters and God knows what, and fluke men, but you won't believe that a woman might have been raped.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the bit I can't get past with this.
No, she needed to be much more forceful about it. Literally said, don't be a dick.
Because Scully totally would. She totally would do that, I think. And that, yeah. So immediately you've got that element of Mulder's just a bit out of character here. And then when they get to sit there, when they go and talk to Michelle, obviously we find out that it's Hal who is the one she thinks has done this to her. And she's not getting any work comp or disability for it, as she says, which is a bit shit, again. And Scully's sympathetic, because as she says, it's hard to build a case without evidence, which is the logical thing to say. You know, I don't think that you're lying about being raped, but you know, it's very difficult. Yeah, if you've been raped by a ghost, You know, there's no semen, as they say. How do we prove this? And then what's interesting is that Michelle actually brings up the idea that, oh, well, you know, I know everyone will think that I'm repressing an older experience, you know, through this and all this kind of thing. And it's almost like through the writers, through her, are kind of trying to write off what her psychology could be.
Yeah.
By her sort of knowing it in advance. But then you see, you go from this scene to a really sort of comical one where they go and question Hal and he just shows them his dick. It's like, where are you pitching this? You know, you've just talked to a woman who's been raped, and now you've got an old guy, and he goes, "Well, my plumbing's older than this building."
old guy making dick jokes. It's tonally is all over the shop.
Yeah, exactly. It's odd. I mean, I suppose it's trying to, you know, I think it's purely set up so they can get a little bit of a shipper moment in there, because Hal says, "Oh, I don't want to step on your toes, man," when he compliments Scully.
Yeah.
And you get, and Mulder just sort of passes it by.
Yeah, doesn't confirm or deny. Just
no.
Makes jokes.
But so you've gone from the Michelle scene to this scene, and then to Mulder basically turning around and saying, "Yeah, that what I mentioned earlier, where he says, you know, this will be a waste of time. No entity rape case has ever been proven, but Scully is coming at it from the female perspective and wants to look into it more." And I know I keep banging the same drum, but I just have so many problems with this.
Yeah,
you know, I really do.
I do as well. You watch it and you just go, and the more you think about it, the more obvious it becomes that, you know, someone's ulterior motive in the writing is coming through here.
Yeah.
Because Mulder would not act like that, you know. The Mulder we all know and love would not do that.
It's all just too cavalier about it all. It's really, really pitched wrongly. And so Mulder and Scully speak to the manager of the place, Mrs. Dawson, is played by an actress called Sheila Moore, who also appeared in Deep Throat, as the wife of the crazy guy who's picking, like, flies out of his hair.
Yeah.
But she gets a bigger role here, because she's one of those annoying middle manager women, or people, not just women, but more annoying middle manager people who just refuse to see what's there right in front of their nose.
Oh, we've all had managers like that as well, haven't we?
Yeah, oh God, yeah, yeah. She's talking about how, you know, the funding was cut at Excelsis and they didn't, you know, they used to be a lot more prestigious and they've lost a lot of that now. But she still stands up for, like, how the people are well taken care of. So it's like, well, whatever. You clearly don't know what's going on with these douche canoes, as you described earlier, you know. So you've got her giving a bit of context. But it's leaden, though, isn't it? You're watching it and going, why am I fucking... Yeah, 4 episodes ago, I was watching, like, a tense hostage negotiation scene with some brilliant writing, like Emmy Award-winning performances, and now I'm watching two old fuckers, one with a weird Cockney accent going, "Oh, mate, you all right? Take your pills, mate."
It is fucking bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is really, like, fallen straight out of an Oliver play.
Yeah, yeah. Or I keep thinking of, like, Stanley Holloway in My Fair Lady.
Yeah.
I expected him to break into "I'm getting married in the morning." Ding dong, the bells are good. I might have enjoyed it more if he'd have done that.
Well, yeah, turn it into a musical episode.
Which I'm amazed that the X-Files. Well, actually, he never did a musical episode, did it? I think I'm amazed they didn't do it. I suppose the closest they got to was Hollywood AD with the dancing skeletons.
Yeah. Oh, I love Hollywood AD.
Hollywood AD.
It's such a stupid episode, but
it's
really
great, isn't it? Mulder, Skinner in the bath.
Yeah.
Oh no, we need to stop this because we're just going to keep talking about better episodes.
Yeah.
And we're a long way off Hollywood AD. But yeah, you've got all through this. You see, what's a shame is that there is actually an interesting idea in Excelsis Day, which is the idea of old people who are sort of rediscovering them, their youth.
Yeah.
Through what we later find out are these pills. And when you get these scenes between, like, Stan and Hal, where they're talking about, you know, they're hiding something, they've got something to hide, you know, you've got this idea that they're a bit cheeky and they're trying to recapture a little bit of stuff. And then later on, you see even more examples of that. But I think that's a really interesting idea. But it's just buried, really, underneath all the rest of it, which just doesn't fit together. I like that. I like the idea that the Alzheimer's that should affect them and ultimately does again.
Yeah.
is being sort of eroded away by what's going on, and they're sort of getting their faculties back, but it's a bit twisted. I like that.
Oh yeah, and I quite like the grumpy old men style of just guys getting up to mischief when they're getting older.
Yeah,
you know, it's just a shame that this episode has mischief turning into that. I really quite like the idea of, you know, like you say, getting their faculties back from wonder drugs, from Oriental. They're not racist at all, orderly.
Yeah, not Bert Kwok. But obviously, you know, Hal is after some more pills and Stan isn't wanting to give him any. And then you've got Mulder and Scully still with the middle manager woman who's now suggesting that Michelle has faked all this for insurance purposes.
Yep.
And you go, well, fuck you. You know, especially as you're a woman. I mean, in a way, it would have made more sense if you'd have been a man.
Yeah.
Because you could imagine more of a man, actually. But, you know, it's just even more of a kind of, well, why would you think that? You're a woman, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, see, now she's not just that middle manager that can explain things away. Now she's a proper old-school battle-axe twat.
Exactly.
She's got no time for people like that at all. Just fuck right off.
Yeah, just do one. Then you've got Hal having taken a pill, who dies. And then you get Scully doing a doctor thing, Gong acting shiftily, somebody shouting, where's that crash cart? As it goes to black.
Yeah.
I don't know who shouted that, because it didn't sound like Scully.
No, that's absolutely stock from something else.
Yeah, yeah, it was, wasn't it?
Because at no other point that somebody asked for a crash cart, they just asked for a defibrillator.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
So literally, they've gone, oh, hold on, let me just get this, hold on. Cut this bit out of ER and I'm just going to drop it in there.
So yeah, Hal's dead because he's taken too many pills, too many fun pills. And Scully's talking to Dr. Grego, who I thought at first he was Dr. Gregor. And then I started thinking about Colony and Endgame and thinking, did they use the same name twice? But then I found out it's Dr. Grego. But still.
Did you sit there before What's-His-Face dies? Did you sit there and go, did he just tell him to fuck off?
Yeah.
I started watching it. Literally, I rewound and when you did not just say fuck say off that. In the X-Files.
I wish it had a done.
But I don't even know what buck off means.
Off.
Really?
They can't say fuck off.
Yeah.
So buck off. It's like Hot Fuzz with the peas and rice thing, isn't it? It's that. So, you've got Grego talking about the experiments on curing Alzheimer's and that Hal may have resumed some faculties and youth before he died. So, you know, we're setting up the idea that there's some experimentation going on here and that Scully says, well, hang on a minute, this isn't scientifically proven. So, it's all a little bit on the edge again. And that originally, like people like Hal, they couldn't string a sentence together. They were just, you know, they completely lost. So, this has brought them back. And we now see Gong is up. We now know Gong is up to something because he talks to Stan about, and we find out he's giving Stan the pills.
Yep.
And Stan's going, I want more! I want more pills! And Gong is like, no, you have too many. This racist, I don't know. You must stop. They are bad for you. Too many are bad for you. No, I want more! Maybe I should have just done this episode in the style of these characters. It would have been more fun.
Well, you know, a little bit of accidental racism in your podcast. You know. How's it any worse than anything that happens in this actual episode of The X-Files?
It's true. It's true. That's my defence. That's my defence. Yeah, you know, there's the question now of whether Gong is the bad guy, because he's giving these guys the pills. If it is bad, he doesn't seem to be a bad guy, so you've got that question. And then you see another example of and this is the one that I think is the most interesting, the old guy Leo, who's the artist, who's had severe Alzheimer's, is now drawing again. You know, and there is some interesting commentary about debilitating illnesses and how people, the sadness of Alzheimer's and how people lose themselves completely and they lose what they were good at and what their skills were. And then, you know, they're talking to Leo and he's drawing, and he seems quite lucid and, you know, they're asking him, is this the Dr. Grego's medication? He says, no. And they're all like, oh, so how are you doing this exactly? And you've also got the old babbling woman, Dorothy, who's talking to herself and having her own little tea party. So, you know, you've got these little characters and it establishes these little characters in the care home. By this point, I don't know. Even doing this, even talking about it, I'm bored.
Yep.
I really am. I'm finding this one hard.
it, It's just such a such a mishmash of not really good story elements combined with the shit we've talked about already. And you sit there and you go, I don't care. I don't care that this guy suddenly can draw, you know, because he used to draw before. And, you know, and don't get me wrong at all. You know, things like Alzheimer's and that, it's terrible. And of the things in this world that really do scare the living shit out of me, things like that are up on that list. But this episode just doesn't make me care about any of it. I just want to go, just fuck off.
No, I know. Because it's just so ham-fisted with it all. It's just a shame. But this is the point now where Mulder is like, he's at seen enough. As far as he's concerned, it's like, there's nothing to this. It's a waste of time. I don't care about the woman who was supposed to be raped. Let's go. And Scully's now, what is interesting is Scully's the one who's coming up with the theories now. She's trying to find a scientific and environmental reason for why this is happening. And then Mulder says, you don't think this place is haunted, do you? Come on, Scully.
Because this is the bit that really made me angry. She was just, you know, raped by a ghost living in the walls. And the little smirk. Why not punch him in his face?
Yeah, exactly. And again, I know we keep saying it, but you know he would believe this.
Yeah.
It's Mulder, for Christ's sake. He would believe this. He would at least entertain the idea. It's ridiculous. And I genuinely think they were doing this a little bit to try and flip it again and make it that Scully's the one who's open-minded and stuff, but not in this fucking episode.
No, you know, this ain't the place to do that.
No, it's really not. It just isn't the place to do that. And you know, there's not enough done with that anyway for it to make any kind of lasting impact.
No.
The only reason that Scully says that is because she's thinking logically and she's actually, you know, she's thinking like a woman and she's putting herself in Michelle's position and things like this, which is what she should do. But Mulder should also think, well, hang on a minute, you know, as a good detective, but no.
Yeah. But you also got to remember, you see, once we get to this point, we've had, you know, this is, I'm getting this right, aren't I? Scully's been abducted at this point.
Yeah. This is just a few episodes after she comes back. Yeah.
So we don't need an episode where Scully is the believer anymore. She's been abducted. She's believer enough, I think, at this point. And this, like you say, this ain't the episode to do it. It's got nothing to do with the conspiracy. It's just, I'll say it again, it's just a shitty ham-fisted episode.
But we're only halfway through, so we need to plug on.
Fucking hell.
We'll keep going, right? Yeah. Think we're nearly there, halfway. Okay. This is going to be really interesting listening for people, isn't it? They're just us all the way through going, oh, fucking hell.
Just still going.
Are we finished yet? Can we talk about Hollywood AD now? Fucking hell, man. But yeah, you've got now, you've seen more of the orderlies being arseholes, trying to force-feed Dorothy. And, you know, so again, underscores that they're crap. Now you've got a scene between Leo and Gung, and there's a bit of a suggestion that Leo is putting the pressure on Gung to actually give them more pills. You know, they're saying, you know, we need more. I need more. I need more, Gung. No. Too many. I've got to stop doing this. it's getting me through, the Gung impression. Oh, God. And then you got a scene with Stan and his daughter. You know, she's saying come home, and he's like, no, I'm not going anywhere. I like it here. And she's like, well, you hated it before. No, things change. I like it here now.
No, I like it. Leave me alone.
Go away. Oh, I think I'm losing my mind doing this podcast. This is what happens, everyone, when you get a really bad episode. Okay? So just wait for Fearful Symmetry, because I'm going to be going up the walls for that one. Okay, seriously. So you've got now, you know, they speak to Stan's daughter and she's talking about how, yeah, he's improved, yada, 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 yada. And this is where you get the scene where the orderly dies when he's trying to run after Stan. This seems purely put there to have a bit of jeopardy, to show that Stan's a bit light on his feet because he's, you know, he's got these pills.
But it's so badly put together.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Okay, so I get the chase and I get the fact that later on, it gets explained to us why he shouldn't be able to run up the stairs. But I get all that. And I get that he's legged it out the window and all that shit. But it's then at no point explained how the orderly got pushed. And I was like, well, okay. And at no point does anybody wonder how this old dude got stuck up on the roof.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody questions that, do they? And you know, was it the ghost creepy old weird men ghost things that show up later, or was it Stan, or was it I don't know.
No, I got no idea. And it's literally, it's not explained. You're literally left to go, it must have just been, yes. Yes, that's what it was.
Yeah. And now he's just, it's just going on. And you know, you got a few quite dull scenes after this, but then you get the scene where, well, I mean, even Grego at one point is questioning Mulder, and Mulder doesn't even sound asked about what he says. What's going on here? And Mulder's like, oh, don't know.
I'm just looking at fuck knows, mate.
Fuck knows. I don't know. I don't even know why I'm here. I'm bored. And David Duchovny's so bored. You can see it in his face.
Yeah.
And he's quite laid back at the best of times. So, and that, you now get, though, the only bit I think that is worth, and I mentioned it earlier, but this is the bit that stands out to me as relatively well done, quite effective, which is where Dorothy's seeing the ghosts in her room and she's going, go away, like this.
Yeah.
And go away, go, shoo. And then Scully's there and she's going, well, what are you looking at? There's nobody there. And then the old ghost men hover around Scully and she does do a bit of a shiver someone's walked over a grave, and then she walks up. And that's good. And I think the way I do think the effects of the old people, you know, the shadowy old people are good.
Oh, yeah. And they're quite convincing as like leery, shadowy ghost things, aren't they? They're quite good as the whole effect of them being there.
Yeah. I think they do that well, you know, because it is quite unsettling. It is quite weird. And it does play into what they're trying to do with the sexism angle of these, you know, leery old men in there, you know. And she's like, oh, you leave her alone. You go away, like this. But I don't know what he's trying to say, almost. You know, is he trying to say, make the point that creepy old ghost pervy men who try and rape women are bad? Because we kind of know that.
Yeah, so there's not something that, if you need to be told that, there's something very wrong.
But how often have you stopped to think about that? I mean, I don't know. I just don't know what he's trying to say. I really don't get it. But it is relatively effective, and it, like I say, it is the moment that when I was younger, especially, it was quite chilling. You know, the scenes with it, and I think there's one other moment later on where the orderly gets pulled into the darkness by the invisible force. I thought that was good, and it was effectively staged and quite creepy. But yeah, the rest of it, all of this weirdness, there's no through line to it. You know, it's all very flat, you know, and nebulous. It's not clear what's really going on, and not in a good way, not in an X-Files kind of way. It just doesn't feel like it's well constructed.
No, it's not. And by the time we get to the end, and you know they fix the thing that looks like it's causing all of it. Like, well, that couldn't have caused all the other stuff. You're connecting things so badly here. It's not fun to watch. It's not interesting to watch. It's just it's not good TV.
No, I'm worried this isn't going to be good podcast either. But we'll see. Yeah, so you've got a little bit of medical stuff as well, where Scully and Grego are talking about the postmortem of Hal's blood, and that there's a possible hallucinogenic in there, but then you get the big Leo's mural thing, which again is quite good. You know, it's quite a good idea of this old guy whose faculties are so much. It's like it's almost like they've gone the other way. His faculties are so in tune that he can create this masterwork on the wall, which all has very sort of oblique. Ghostly imagery as well.
Yeah, see, that's never really explained either, is it? It would be nice if we saw that maybe he was seeing those ghosts as well. And so that's what was the inspiration. Because we see a little bit of that when you see him drawing on a bit of paper.
Yeah.
But it would be really nice if they explained where he's got that particular imagery from. Because at this point in time, he's just painted it for the sake of it.
Again, it's not very clear, you know. And then Mulder just seems to wander off and decide to go looking for Gong's mushroom factory.
Yeah.
He just sort of goes, where's Gong? Where's he live? Right, I'm off. Like that. And he just goes then. It's to be fair, that's a fairly well-executed moment where he finds the mushroom factory and all the soil in the basement, and then he pulls the body out.
I want to know the leap of logic, though, where he goes, you have an Asian orderly. Where is he? And then you go, so he must be downstairs doing something. That's a pretty big leap.
It seems like they were like, how do we get Gong and his secret out? Okay, let's just have Mulder do one of his great leaps of logic. But then, no!
I love that it's, you have an Asian, it must be him.
Yeah, because this episode isn't like, it's already horribly sexist and quite sort of cavalier about rape. So let's be racist too.
Why not?
You get there, and then when Gong is brought in, He brings in, again, it's another example of something that's thrown in this episode. There's a pot of different things in here that don't work together. He throws in this idea of mysticism now, of this ancient Chinese remedy that he's making so he can put in the pills, so he can give these old people. And then he starts talking about how he's doing it because they aren't treated with respect in America, and we look after our old people, you know, we care for them when they're old. You don't. And you're like, well, hang on a minute. This is all. I get this. I get the point of it. I get the whole, what you're trying to tell, but it just doesn't fit together. It's really, you know, you then got the ghost angle, you've got the rape angle, you've got the, you know, the outside. It's just, choose what you want this to be about.
And now you have the Asian bringing in his own stereotype of hundreds of members of his family living in the same house.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not racist, honestly.
Yeah. But it's the only point at this point where Mulder starts to get interested in the case.
Yeah.
Because it's the point where Gung says that the mushrooms are taken to commune with the spirit world. And then Mulder suddenly goes, oh, this is more my kind of thing.
Like ghost rape wasn't previously.
Yeah. The ghost rape and the weird Alzheimer's making every, you know, going and people becoming prodigies and that's not, no. Oh, weird magic mushrooms. Yeah, here we go.
So I think we're seeing his true colours there.
But it's just, by this point though, you're just like, I don't give a toss. And why is this all thrown into the pot? And it just comes too late to have any kind of impact at all. It's just let's veer the story this way. And it speaks to the fact that if the script was unfinished, that Chris Carter clearly didn't really have any idea what this was about or where it should go, and they just did what they could. So you've now got the whole climax. And you know, if anything, this episode really felt like a season one episode in a lot of ways. Look, you know the episodes where in season one, some of which we've talked about, where they haven't really figured out what makes this show work properly yet. And you've got quite a bland case, but you also have that horrible trope of Scully not being there to see anything.
Yeah.
Which they do again here. And it's that whole idea that when they go after, when they're called upstairs and they start running up from downstairs, Mulder just sprints and Scully does a little trot. And she's, did you notice that she's really slow compared to him? And it's like, oh, what are you doing? Like, no, just it's only there so she gets there late and she gets shut out and she's not behind that door when the tank fills up.
And it feels like a season one episode in so many other ways as well. Like, it doesn't feel well put together. It doesn't feel like it's got the budget of the rest of it. Like you say, it's clearly an unfinished script that's caused that. I remember because we said while we were recording some of the episodes of season one, like a lot of season two is very, very good episodes, but there still is, you know, one or two stinkers, and man, is this the worst of them.
I think it would be up there. When you get to the climax, obviously, is the flood and the room is filling up with water. Special effects supervisor Dave Gauthier built a large tank and painstakingly dressed it to look like the bathroom in the hospital. It was filled with 3,300 gallons of water.
Bloody hell.
Yeah. And Terry Rothery talked about how when she's trapped in there with David Duchovny, she said there was a scene where we were submerged in this tank in the bathroom and it's late and we got punchy. They had heated the water for us to about 90 degrees, so it was quite warm. I remember the two of us having to hang in this tank because we couldn't come out. I don't know how many hours we had hanging in this tub. David would crack lines, let's just say bathroom humour. So you can imagine him coming out with puns.
Yeah. So much urine in that water when it came out the door.
Yeah. Apparently as well, what is interesting is that where they filmed a lot of this, it was a place called Riverview, which was in Vancouver. And apparently there were rumours that it was haunted, the actual set. Again, Tara Rothery, who did a lot of interviews for this, she talked about how, she said, you hear various stories from the crew. She said, I remember this one incident where a producer went to use the restroom and it's like eerily quiet and it's just scary. He opened the restroom door and this whole flood of water came out. There was no leakage. There was no seepage of water under the door. Now, I keep wondering if that was an inspiration.
Yeah, maybe.
And maybe they threw that in at last minute as like, oh, okay, that can be a nod to what happened to this guy. Makes you wonder, do we care? Probably not. But
sadly not.
But there is the suggestion as well that with the water blasting out, it's only after Stan gets sedated that that the door opens. So is it suggesting that Stan was controlling these ghosts, or he was sort of psychically doing some shit that caused the orderly to die and then caused them to get locked in there?
Yeah, but this is kind of the thing I mentioned earlier. It's like it suddenly explains everything as if Stan was doing all of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because everything, you know, he's made better and sedated, and all of a sudden everything, you know, the ghosts go away, the door opens in the bathroom, all of that, it all just vanishes. But you can't explain away everything that happened before that as being from Stan. Mainly because this woman was convinced that the guy who's already died was the guy doing the raping.
So well, yeah, exactly.
I don't get how it doesn't match together at all.
No, it doesn't. And I just kept thinking, especially towards the end, why didn't they just make this episode a murder mystery about old people who become like savants because of like mystical drugs? Why did they even need the ghosts? They could have just done it with Gong's weird remedy, whatever, and they could have brought that in earlier and have it be a murder mystery and one of them is responsible. And not bringing the ghosts, not bringing all this weird psychic link bullshit or whatever. And it's like, well, it just felt like they just wanted some scenes of a haunted, some ghosts going down a corridor. It's like,
So someone's found the tech to make those ghosts look cool. So we need to put this in the episode so I can use this little bit of software. Let me do it.
Exactly. Yeah, they want to use it. And I did laugh at the end. Now, this won't, and not everyone will get this, but I did. Have you seen Father Ted?
Not much of it, no.
Oh, okay. You may not know. You may not have seen the episode with Father Stone.
No.
Okay. Well, anyone who has seen the Father Stone episode of Father Ted, when Scully bursts in and she goes, "You okay, Mulder?" He just goes, "Yeah, I'm fine." Just Google Father Stone Brooker at some point, right? Go on YouTube, Google Father Stone from Father Ted, and you will get why I found that so funny. But yeah, anyone who's watched Father Ted, total Father Stone moment at the end. You've now just got one of those. This is one of those episodes where there's no real final tag scene, so they just do a little bit of a montage and Scully doing a little bit of a case file roundup.
Yeah.
Blah, this happened to this person. This person went there. This place has been shut down. You know, Gong gets exported back to Malaysia, doesn't he? And deported, I should say, not exported, deported.
Exported. Like a box of tea.
I wouldn't drink his tea. Fucking hell, not what he puts in it. And then, obviously, you've got the final scene of how Stan and Leo and all those, and Dorothy, they've all gone back to being basically just catatonic, haven't they now?
Yeah.
In the home. And it is a bit of an eerie final moment because, the suggestion is whatever Gong was giving them did genuinely help them. It did actually make them more lucid. It did cure their condition for a while, and they've just reverted now back to just waiting to die, basically.
Yeah. Well, we're back to an atypical care home scene now, aren't we? Just old people literally just waiting around to get progressively worse.
Yeah, which is really sad.
But it should be a really somber ending to an episode. But the fact is, the rest of the episode we've watched, I'm just glad it's over. I don't care that it's supposed to be this really somber kind of, oh, that's really sad. I was like, I just didn't go, yes!
Oh, thank God. Where was even like some sort of wrap up for Michelle as well?
Yeah.
Like there's no sort of come back to the end of that and go, oh, by the way, yeah, do you feel like justice has been done? Do you feel like you feel better now? Do you feel... No, nothing. I think she completely forgot she was raped. She barely even features in the rest of the episode as well. Just for the end where she comes back in because she's in peril.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, that was your entire opening hook. The idea that this horrible thing had happened to this woman. And by the end, yeah, you just, oh, thank God for that. Thank God for that. Just put me out of my misery.
Yeah.
Have we scored it 2-0? I mean, we've given it 4s. I think we may have done.
But it's one of the more you talk about it, the more you go, maybe I was being generous.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we were, you know. I'm bringing mine down. I'm giving it a 3.
Yeah, I think 3 probably fits in more.
It's getting a 3. Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck those people on IMDb. They've got no idea what they're talking about.
Yeah. Screw them. Screw IMDb. It's, yeah. So that was Excelsis Day. Thank God it's over.
I think you're right, Scully.
About?
What's been happening here is a result of the medication, but not the medication the doctor's been giving them.
Mulder, mushrooms aren't medication. They taste good on hamburgers, but they don't raise the dead.
Shamans have been using them for centuries to gain entrance to the spirit world.
I think you've been reading too much Carlos Castaneda.
All right, ask any anthropologist then.
I know, but shaman gets intoxicated, he has dreams or hallucinations, and he interprets them. I don't think it's any more magical than that.
I don't know how else to explain what's happening here.
Well, I think, if anything, these mushrooms are a poison to the system. And I think that's what killed Hal Harden.
And raped Michelle Charters and killed those two orderlies. Now, something's been unleashed here, Scully. I don't know how to explain it, but it has something to do with those pills.
So, do you believe in... I suppose we could have ghosts or magic mushrooms, but there's better episodes to do that. Sod it. Let's just do the quiz.
Yeah, go on then. My notes are not... There's not much to take note of in this episode. So I'm hoping either I've missed shitloads and you're going to whoop my ass with this quiz, or I'm going to get all of them because there's nothing to write.
It took me a while to come up with questions, so we'll see. Yeah, so last time you got 5 out of 6, you narrowly missed out. The quote defeated you in Sleepless.
Yeah.
So
I'm gutted about that as well.
It's such a shame, such a shame. So, okay, 5 questions and a quote then on Excelsis Day. Die. I still don't know how you say it, you know. Is it day or die? It's day.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's day.
Excelsis made me want to bloody die watching it. So anyway, question one. At the very beginning, the orderlies talk about somebody who died earlier with her face planted right in her bowl. Yep. What was the name of her?
It's Miss Richardson.
Yes, well done, Mrs. Richardson. Yeah, excellent. Well done, one off the grid. Question two. How long was Hal Arden at Excelsis?
How long was Hal there?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mentioned in dialogue.
Crap. I think he was there for... Was he there for 8 years?
Oh, yes! Good guess.
I didn't write that one down.
Well done. That was very good then. Yeah. You've remembered more than you thought you might about this episode.
I can scrub my brain when we're done, so I don't remember it anymore.
Yeah, erase. Question three. What was the name of Dr. Grego's experimental drug being used on residents... As the sniffy manager says, they're residents, they're not patients.
Deprenil.
Deprenil, well done. Yeah, very good. 3 out of 3, doing well here. Question 4. According to Dorothy, who has one of Leo's paintings in the White House?
Kennedy.
President Kennedy has one of them in the White House.
Do you see him roll his eyes at her when she says that?
He's like, oh, whatever. Shut up, Dorothy. You're doing this. You might get this. Let's see.
It'll be a really shit episode for me to get all sick from.
You'll be like Matt Latham, who I think he nearly got a full score in Space.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Question 5. What does Stan Phillips suffer from?
Oh, a degenerative hip disease.
Yes! Well done! Yeah. I thought that was going to stump you for a minute there. Very good. And I think you may get this as well, actually. I think you're going to get them. The quote is... I've got plumbing older than this building.
Oh, God. It's when when Mulder and Scully are talking to Hal in the bathroom.
You've done it. You got 6.
Oh, God.
You have the dubious honour of getting full marks on...
But for probably one of the worst episodes this season.
You know, it might end up being worse than Fearful Symmetry. We'll see. We'll see when we get there. But, yeah, definitely one of the 2 worst episodes of the season. A dubious honour. Mr. Brooklyn.
Wow. Although I'm quite happy with myself. I've done that twice now. I'm all right with this.
Yeah. You've got this down to an art now. So when you're back on. So yeah, that was Excelsis Day. A slog. A slog. Never a slog talking to you, Brooker, but a slog getting through that, I tell you.
Yeah, the slog to watch, and like you say, not a slog talking to you, but a slog to just talk about. What a painful episode to try and deconstruct.
Oh, God. Well, I just hope that, listeners, you haven't had a painful experience listening to us be outraged, mildly racist, and very bored. So, I apologise if you have been, and most of you probably switched off halfway through, but if you did, do you know what? I don't blame you for this one.
No.
I really don't blame you. So, if you are still listening, where can we find you, Brooker, for people who might want to find out a bit more?
So, for less snarky and much less racist rants from me, I spend a lot of my time on Twitter. I'm at Brooker411, where I talk about everything from music and movies and TV to whatever happens to be pissing me off on the day. And I write and podcast a little bit for Failed Critics.
Yeah, all good stuff. As I said before, Foul Critics is wicked. I guest on it as well every now and then. It's just great fun. So make sure you check it out. You're going to be back for Colony and Endgame.
I am well excited for that. They're up there. I think Colony and Endgame were the second X-Files compilation VHS that I bought after Coons. And I love those two.
They are brilliant, aren't they? They're two of my favourites, actually, as well. Two of my favourite mythology episodes, and I think they're the best mythology episodes of season two, for me, anyway.
Yeah,
I love them. They're so good. So, yeah, we're going to have much, much more fun doing them than we have Excelsis Deck.
Absolutely.
So yeah, you've paid for this, Brooker. You know, you're gonna get your reward soon. So we'll be back next week. But yeah, again, cheers, Brooker, for getting through this with me.
Oh, thanks for having me on, mate. I really, even with the shitty episodes, it's always fun to talk to you.
Cheers, and until we're back, guys, just remember the famous trust no one. The X-Cast is produced and presented by Tony Black, part of the Black Hole Media podcast network. Title music is courtesy of Will A, who you can find on Twitter at IamWillAYE.